Good find.
Do you know what this is?
Of course I know what this is. I'm not that young.
I wasn't sure if I would have to explain it to you.
Nope. Well, as someone who grew up in a house with an uncle who loved country movies.
Oh.
This was, this is obviously Clint Eastwood. He was much more of a John Wayne fan, but obviously this is The Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Yep.
Which is a new segment that I think we're going to try out. I've been trying to figure out, you know, some of these topics that don't always require a ton of...
A segment all their own.
Yeah, or like there's not as much like a talk show element of, well, what do you think? It just kind of is, but it's stories that I think deserve more attention. And for people who maybe didn't read it in any of the newspapers or saw it on any of the TV shows, just to give it a little bit more of an oomph. But what we're calling it is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of Wisconsin Headlines.
I love it.
And so, as we start off with the good, I think the good, because yesterday there was a press conference, I guess, with Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call and the Department of Human Services officials giving an update on the state's first opioid settlement plan payment. Because Wisconsin, like
so many other
states, has been wrecked by opioid addiction and overdoses and fentanyl. And, just as much as we've seen the crisis that this has exploded over the last 5 years.
Well, I want to say I did a news story this morning that in Waukesha County last year, there were over 92 overdose deaths.
Jesus.
And it just keeps going up. And there is a concerted effort. I don't know how you break through with this information about the deadly effects of fentanyl and some of these other things that can be now laced into so many things.
I heard something that it can be even laced into like weed now.
Yes, I've heard that too.
Which is terrifying because it's when we talk about the death rate, because I think there was something, we're still in that area of being one of the only states that has even medical marijuana is not legal, and the kind of antiquated excuses for that on the Republican side is that it's a gateway drug when we literally have a gateway drug that is leading to heroin and fentanyl use because people get addicted to pain pills after they've been, they've actually have something that they are prescribed for because they have pain, but because they're so addictive, the escalation has been
to go to street drugs.
Truly tragic.
Yeah. Did you see Dope Sick with Michael Keaton?
I didn't. My parents watched it and they said it was excellent.
It is just chilling. And how many doctors in genuine good faith prescribed these pills because they thought it was a miracle painkiller? And as you said, once that effectiveness wore off or they started getting weaned off those pills, a lot of them turned to street drugs.
Well, because there's also something. I had a good friend in San Francisco, and we lived together for a little while, and he was a rugby player in college at Cal, and he had a shoulder surgery. And he already kind of had an addictive personality. Like, he was just had that in him as far as, pushing the extremes and kind of like touching the burner as many times until he got, testing until he got burned. And mm-hmm. So he had that personality already. But then when he had a shoulder surgery and he had a prescription, and then that escalated to a lot of bad things to the point that I had to ask him to not, I couldn't live with him anymore because he was lying, and just the things that escalated from there, that all started with a surgery, right?
Well, and I can remember back 20 years ago, everyone else's doctors were prescribing them Oxy like it was candy.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember going to my doctor with whatever was ailing me, and she would tell me to take Tylenol. And I'm like, everyone else is getting the good stuff. What's going on? And I think she was prescient about these claims that it was non-addictive, and therefore stayed away from prescribing that.
Yeah.
And I'm fortunate because I too have an addictive personality. I can see that happening.
Yeah, absolutely. So the good news is, after Wisconsin, like other states, has settled with several drug manufacturers and distributors in February of this year, DHS is now is set to receive more than $400 million over the next 18 years. And we received the first payment of $6 million less than 2 weeks ago. And $5 million of that is earmarked to go to preventative measures and also fentanyl testing strips, which I don't know how those get distributed. I don't know if it's like a risk reduction model where if you're already someone who is struggling with addiction, those are just free and accessible, like condoms,
right.
So that you can test things before you were potentially going to take them. But
it's
good.
It's a step.
And so I thought that was kind of a good first step as far as so many people who've been affected by this, either as someone who is struggling with addiction or a family member of someone who's struggling with addiction. So that is the good. The bad. The schools are not okay.
No, they're not.
Article from the Green Bay Gazette. Danielle Duclos. Do you think that's... It looks like a French last name.
Yeah.
Duclos. She did a pretty in-depth report on the financial struggles of the school, different school districts. And so many Wisconsin school districts may face deficits and budget cuts for a variety of reasons. Now, the first reason being declining enrollment. And that is partially because of private education vouchers and open enrollment. So that is pulling students away from what would be their home district of
their neighborhood school,
the school down the street. But there's also just been a declining birth rate. As we've seen with the census that came out in 2020, for 2020, the only county that had any growth was Dane County. And so when there's less kids in each school, the schools have less per pupil funding from the state, even though there's not necessarily less cost just because there's fewer students. And so that's the first one. And then the second one was the pandemic, meaning that labor costs rose since, if you think about it, there needed to be more teachers, there needed to be more staff to try to, catch up with the learning loss that happened throughout the pandemic. There's been frozen spending limits. So basically since 2019, there's been state caps on school revenue, which that coupled with inflation... So the money that's been capped for how much these schools get from the state that hasn't changed in going on three years is going less far or not going as far because inflation prices. And so there's just a kind of a bad storm of financial problems that is directly hitting our schools. And the thing is, even though there was such an influx of money with COVID relief money, that's all basically going to run out by 2024. And so basically this means that districts are either going to have to face huge, substantial budget deficits, or they may have to go through like referendums to be able to balance budgets. But it reminded me of Tim Michaels on the stage of the debate saying, well, we've been spending so much money on schools and it's not fixing anything. It's like, well, they needed.
Look at the bigger picture.
Look at the bigger picture, and it's like if we just let schools decline,
what then?
What then?
Well, don't you think that is partly the goal? I do think there is a contingency that would love to see public schools go away. That would love to see private education or public education go away. I think in some ways, there were officials within the former administration who were there to destroy the departments that they led.
At the federal level.
At the federal level. Yeah. Like Betsy DeVos.
Yes. And I just, it's such a shorts, because I always come back to this, and it's not the first time that I've said this, and it probably will not be the last time, but the idea that I don't think it's as ingrained to us of what a public good is. And the idea that there's things that we all pay into because it has returning benefits for all of us, whether
Absolutely.
It be parks,
roads,
public schools,
sewers,
yeah, plumbing, and public school being one of them. And that by privatizing them, and I understand the idea of competition being a good thing, but when there's not enough children to, how many schools are you going to have in De Pere?
That they're going to have choices among.
Yeah. And, there's a reason why when you go to smaller towns, there's not a ton of competition for restaurants. And it's not like they have a bunch of great restaurants there because there's not the amount of people who can keep those establishments funded. And so that there it doesn't drive competition, because as much as competition of multiple choices drives competition, you still need enough people to be able to choose between those things for both parties to even exist.
Yeah.
So that's the bad. This is why these are presented this way, because I don't have an answer besides good, bad, and ugly.
Well, this is what is. And that's not even getting us talking about teachers. Yes. And this is a nationwide problem with fewer people want to go into the teaching profession. What a shock. I've always believed that, for the most part, there are certainly bad teachers, but nobody ever went into teaching to get rich.
No.
It's a calling for a lot of these people. And I think the way they have been mistreated and bad-mouthed and demonized over the last decade, the last 15 years here in Wisconsin, and now we're talking about arming teachers, I don't know how we encourage people to go into this profession.
Besides, I mean, I think when Ed was here, Ed DeSazer, who was here a couple weeks ago, you know, he's on the side of making it easier to become a teacher, which I've heard some, you know, mixed feelings on that, of like, take that to its logical end, and that it does it open up the doors for, like, obviously there's going to be some people who don't have the requirements who are going to be excellent teachers, but it also could open the door for people who are not excellent teachers. And is it just throwing bodies at the situation? I don't know.
But how do you... What about calculus? What about...
Did you take calculus?
Oh, good heavens, no. That's why I'm in radio, because I don't math. I needed to do something else. But there are things that I could teach. I think I could teach English. I think I could teach some basic courses.
Do you think you could teach theater, since you were a theater kid like me?
Oh, sure. We'll just improvise the whole thing. But you know what I'm saying. There are things that require an element of expertise to be able to teach these. Chemistry,
yeah,
you know, things like that.
Absolutely. So then to round it off with the ugly, apparently we can't we're not allowed to disagree anymore. We were not allowed to just like all believe that America has a history of racism, because, you know, I feel like in a not so long ago Republican Party, you could at least just agree that, like, 250 years of slavery, different programs and systems that were set up to redline and disadvantage and keep segregation alive and well for another 60 some years after slavery, even 100 years-ish after slavery, that we could at least agree that there was a history of racism in this country. But now that is like a political ding in the Republican Party. At least it is in the Republican Attorney General's race. So Fond du Lac District Attorney Eric Toney, he wrote after George Floyd was murdered, you know, a very thoughtful Facebook piece reflecting on his life and what happened. And he said something along the lines that those who were responsible for George Floyd's death should be brought to justice, and that the justice system can only do so much, and that convictions won't bring back George Floyd, nor can they erase the emotions of this week or the history of racism that led to this moment. And now, apparently, those sentiments can get used against you, because his opponent, Adam Jarko, put out a mailer saying why you cannot trust Eric Toney. And his sentiment there was listed as one of the reasons you can't trust him, because he believes that there was a history of racism. And this reminds me of the, like, exclusive video that went that got attention earlier this summer of Mandela Barnes a year ago saying something very similar, and it was considered this terrible leftist radical
bomb throwing
to say, like, is this not something that we can all agree on anymore, that to even acknowledge that we have a racist history is now a point that you don't love our country?
It's extreme.
All right, so that is our first good, bad, and ugly of Wisconsin headlines. We'll see if it makes it back again. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.